If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning.
My name is Joshua Briscoe. I'm with you here from 9 to noon today, 9 to noon tomorrow, but also, most interestingly, as Cody Tapp in the promo called an odd pairing, Charlie Carlin, who's currently running the board right now, and I will be leading you up to the Royals game today. Baseball Tonight pregame starts at 2. We're also going to be sticking around until 6-ish. Whenever the game ends, we've got postgame also. But we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs right now. We're going to get plenty of Royals talk in coming up at 2 with our moment with Monty. We're talking to Les Norman and Soren Petro. Those are our guests coming up on Baseball Tonight today, baseball this afternoon. So we will get your Royals talk covered. But right now, we spent last segment talking about why the Chiefs cut Jeremy Maclin, the arguments on either side of it. And now I'm curious, after a week of sitting on it, where we go from here. What was said this week that might give you a hint of where Andy Reid is leaning? What might give you some direction and where the Chiefs should be going? Now there's a vacancy at the number one receiver spot. It's where Jeremy Maclin played, so you can't argue that, well, he wasn't the number one receiver. There is a vacancy left by Jeremy Maclin as the number one outside receiver. And for my money, that is obviously, clearly, fairly, absolutely going to Tyreek Hill. I mean, he needs to have the first crack at it about a dozen times. I would need to see Tyreek Hill fail at this several times before I would be like, all right, you know what, put Chris Conley out there. And there was an article from Seth Kaiser, MN Chiefs fan, who's been on this show now 15 times. I want to talk to him about this, but he's not coming on today. We're just not going to have it. But he wrote an article for Arrowhead Pride about Tyreek Hill's future, about the things that a wide receiver needs to have and the things that a wide receiver needs to do. And he broke down into five categories what receivers need to be able to do to be a true number one receiver. Five things. You got to be able to get separation against various types of coverages and or be able to win at the catch point. You've got to have one of those two things. He went through a ton of film. I would encourage you to read this article and to look at the GIFs. I read the whole thing. It's a great read. I'm not going to read it all again because the reading segment was last segment. But he comes away with this from this film study saying, yes, Hill is consistently getting separation, and he's doing it in several different ways. His quickness is getting him away from press coverages. Whenever defensive backs don't get their hips turned around, he is going deep past them. He's beating coverages in a multitude of ways. And he also wins the catch point fairly consistently. Number two, you got to be able to catch the ball consistently, ideally with your hands rather than your body. Yes, Tyreek Hill has had a couple of drops last year, but it was not much more than that. He has some room for improvement on the consistency of his hands, but he is in no way plagued by drops. Third thing, you got to be able to track the ball in the air. Tyreek Hill, Seth came away with this understanding, and I had the same one just from watching the season last year. Tyreek Hill is better than most receivers at that. I'm not saying he's better than Julio Jones at that, but there were plenty of times whenever he would come back for an underthrown ball, both from Alex Smith and from Nick Foles, when he would come back for a severely underthrown deep ball, and he made the play. That's something that's hard for a small receiver to do. And he does it well. You got to be able to handle the physicality. Tyreek Hill did it all year last year. And you got to be able to break and avoid tackles and get yards after the catch. Tyreek Hill is an impossible man to get after he has the ball in his hands. I think Tyreek Hill is, and I've been saying this since at the very least the end of last season. I think I was probably saying it halfway through last season. But especially this offseason, I want the record to show I was on this train well before Jeremy Maclin got cut. Tyreek Hill is a number one wide receiver in every sense of the word. If you think that Antonio Brown is a true number one receiver, if you think that DeSean Jackson is a true number one receiver, if you think that T.Y. Hilton is a true number one receiver, then so is Tyreek Hill. Those guys are all different than Julio Jones. But those are also some of the best. And Tyreek Hill, size-wise, virtually identical to all three of those guys. He's a little bit bigger than DeSean Jackson. He's faster, a little bit, than all of them. Every measurable, every optic category, Tyreek Hill is completely fit to be a number one NFL wide receiver. Also looks like he'll keep returning punts and not kicks. That makes sense. D'Anthony Thomas is apparently going to be on this roster. He'll be returning kicks until Nile Davis returns from the dead for some reason that will be completely unexplainable. But Tyreek Hill is, in my mind, the obvious number one wide receiver on this team. And not just getting more gadget snaps, not having more plays drawn up for him to get him more touches, to get him a number one receiver number of touches, but to become an actual number one NFL wide receiver. Chris Conley is going to be the guy with the most interesting development because he did some things really well last year. We saw Chris Conley make some plays. We went, oh, hey. Hey, that looks like an NFL wide receiver. And Chris Conley has the physical tools. He has the body of an NFL receiver, whatever that means. He's super smart, whatever that's good for. A couple of traits that no one's ever confused Tyreek Hill for having, so I don't. Maybe none of that matters. But Chris Conley seems to have every tool. But he hasn't necessarily had every opportunity. Now, great players will get small scraps of opportunity and turn them into starting gigs. Tyreek Hill just did that. But I think Chris Conley has a chance to be a totally reasonable number two wide receiver. Opposite Tyreek Hill, somebody else playing the third role. We'll get to that in a minute. I'm all right with Chris Conley stepping into that role. I would rather him be the number three receiver on an offense with Jeremy Maclin, Tyreek Hill, and Chris Conley. That's definitely a better roster than Tyreek Hill, Chris Conley, and DeMarcus Robinson, who didn't get a target in his rookie season. You can talk me into Chris Conley. He's also now the veteran in that room, which is amazing because he's 24 years old. He and Albert Wilson are the veterans, as you heard Andy Reid earlier say. You know, their biggest qualifications for taking over leadership roles is the fact that both of them were around Jeremy Maclin a lot. Jeremy Maclin, who was fired from his job by the team, that is now like, well, yeah, he was a great leader. As long as you spent time around Jeremy Maclin, you'll probably be a great leader too. But Chris Conley seems to have the makeup to do that. So the real question, I think, is who is next after Tyreek Hill and Chris Conley? And Andy Reid seems to have given us our answer. It's Tyreek Hill number one. It's Chris Conley number two. And then?
Yeah, we're moving them around. And DeMarcus, I would tell you, you know what 12 can do. And DeMarcus is, he's the young one that's come up here a little bit and had a pretty good offseason. So we'll see how he does once we get going in the preseason.
All right, let's decode that, because that was actually amazing. Charlie, leave that sound open. I want to play the beginning of that again. I'm going to decode it, and then when you hear the beginning of this again. Here's what Andy Reid actually said. Ugh, Albert Wilson is boring. DeMarcus Robinson is here. He's around. He went through OTAs. He's not Albert Wilson. Play it again.
Yeah, we're moving them around. And DeMarcus, I would tell you, you know what 12 can do.
You had to DeMarcus in that voice.
Is, you know, he's the young one that's come up here a little bit and had a pretty good offseason. So we'll see how he does once we get going in the preseason.
All right, so again, to recap, you know what 12 can do? That's Albert Wilson. He wouldn't even use his name. Yeah, you know, we all know what Albert Wilson can do, and it's not great, to be terribly honest. And DeMarcus, you hear that sound? Like that sound of audibly thinking? Well, DeMarcus is young and here, and we'll see what he can do whenever, like, the preseason comes around. Listen, you can hate Jeremy Maclin, but there was never a point whenever Andy Reid was going, well, we'll see what Jeremy Maclin can do whenever he gets some snaps in the preseason. That sound on its own, I think, can illustrate the drop-off. But listen, hey, I'm not here to throw dirt on a shallow grave for DeMarcus Robinson. I'm on board with this. The Chiefs need a third receiver, and neither I nor you nor Andy Reid want it to be Albert Wilson. So, Andy Reid, tell me, what does DeMarcus Robinson do so well?
I mean, he can go after, he's physical, you know, and he can run and he can do the short stuff too. He's good after, his strength coming in was, he was good after the catch, you know, wherever you get it to him, that was one of his strengths. So we'll see how he does here. And again, I'm not saying that he's that guy right now, but he's had a good offseason.
Decoding again, does he do well? He can run. He can probably catch. Oh, he can run after he catches it. Now, I'm not saying that he's that guy now, but if everything breaks right, man, if DeMarcus Robinson had some sort of like incredible talent that we hadn't could not even comprehend, if he's been waiting to blossom, he would have gotten on the field last year at least a little bit, right? Jeremy Maclin missed time last year. This roster was here last year. DeMarcus Robinson and no Jeremy Maclin already happened. And DeMarcus Robinson, I'm not sure he ran a snap at receiver last year. He recorded no statistics. So definitely didn't get a single target in the regular season. I'm not sure he got an offensive snap. Which is not a problem with DeMarcus Robinson. He was a really good special teamer last year. It's probably what Jehu Chesson's here to do also. It's not their fault. The Chiefs are trying to turn special teamers into third string receivers. Your third receiver matters in the NFL. The Chiefs ran a lot of three receiver sets. And yes, of course, Travis Kelce is your actual number one or number two pass catcher. But his versatility, his ability to be a matchup problem and all over the field is one of the things that makes him so valuable. So, yeah, apparently the best, like an unbelievably optimistic scenario has DeMarcus Robinson 3 years from now being Jeremy Maclin. Like 3 years from now, if everything breaks right, if everything possible breaks right, 3 years from now, the Chiefs will let DeMarcus Robinson walk instead of paying him because they apparently don't need a number one receiver or something. And listen, if you can get Jeremy Maclin light as your third receiver extremely cheaply, fine. I'm fine with that. But this idea that the Chiefs aren't going to see a drop-off in wide receiver production is really absurd. Because even if you want to draw comparisons from DeMarcus Robinson and Jehu Chesson to somebody else, you draw those comparisons to Chris Conley, not to Tyreek Hill. Chris Conley wasn't a real part of this offense for 3 years. I would be shocked to see Jehu Chesson become a part of it this year. DeMarcus Robinson becoming a part of it in year two after not being involved in any way in year one would really surprise me. Tyreek Hill has such transcendent talent that Andy Reid was like, all right, listen, I'm willing to put my offense aside to make sure we get you the ball. I'll make my offense fit you. They're not doing that for Jehu Chestnut or DeMarcus Robinson. They're just not. And working in Andy Reid's offense just feels like it's going to be a long process. It all evidence points to that. Unless you have transcendent talent. And if DeMarcus Robinson had transcendent talent, he would have been on the field last year whenever Jeremy Maclin was gone. So as far as Chestnut and Robinson and the battle for the number three wide receiver, I'll believe this upside whenever I see it. And as I mentioned earlier with Kareem Hunt, we will see something in training camp. Andy Reid's usually pretty honest with the snaps. I'll argue that whoever is getting the most snaps in training camp is going to be the guy who's starting there or getting the third string wide receiver snaps come day one. And if Andy Reid has just thrown out smoke screens and they really think that Jehu Chestnut can be a number three receiver right away, right out of the gate, that smoke screen is not going to stay up for very long. Because they're going to say, listen, we want to protect both of these guys, but if we think that Chestnut's the guy who needs the work to be ready by opening day, they're going to give it to him. And we'll know. But I would be surprised to see that. One other thing from the wide receiving side of where the Chiefs currently sit is that the Jets cut Eric Decker. And last year, whenever we were doing that terrible, terrible game of guess who with, like, did you know Vincent Jackson is a free agent? Hey, Justin Blackman is available. What do you think about Eddie Royal? That sickening game that I've been playing with the Chiefs since I was 13. Eric Decker would have been far and away the crown jewel of that list. And he would make a ton of sense for the Chiefs. He really would. But it would be admitting something that the Chiefs don't want to admit. This team needs a veteran wide receiving presence. They need a receiver who's not Chris Conley. Most importantly, they need a third receiver. This team is going to need four pass catchers. That's reasonable, right? Just have three trustworthy receivers plus Travis Kelce. And listen, last year, the running game was a huge problem. And I do think that Kareem Hunt and a healthy Spencer Ware and a healthy Kendrick West are going to revitalize that. I really do. I truly believe the running game is going to take big steps forward this year. But the offense was bad last year. If you pull up all the stats, you'll find them in the middle of the road for the most part. But in so many instances when it mattered, especially in the playoff game against the Steelers, the offense was holding the team back. And they need to be better than just stagnant from where they were last season. They need to take a palpable step forward. And right now, I think the best case scenario feels like treading water. But maybe the running game takes big steps forward. I'm excited to see what Kareem Hunt can do. I'm a little bit less excited to see the third wide receiver battle to evolve into second-year guy versus rookie, none of whom inspire great confidence. Whenever we come back, we'll do a little bit more talking about something from Patrick Mahomes that I think is interesting that might be feeding a little bit of a conspiracy theory from early on right after the draft. And we'll talk about the Royals, get you ready for baseball tonight coming up at 2:00 here when this beautiful golden radio voice will be joined by the other beautiful golden radio voice on the microphone right now, Charlie Carlin, to get you ready for baseball tonight. Charlie, are your pipes warmed?
They are warmed and ready.
I'm speechless.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's a grass animal. They're playing somewhere tonight, right? I'm not having this conversation with myself. I'm having this conversation with Charlie, who dropped some new bump music on me that I was not at all expecting, but I'm cool with it. especially because you and I have 6 hours of bump music to get through today and tomorrow. We'll be back for Sports Sunday. We'll all say all the same things, but with slightly different words. But we will. I'll tell you, we're going to have fresh bump music, I promise. No repeat bump music, except for the Drake song at the end. Because that's iconic. Charlie, before we host baseball tonight together, I'm going to need you to be a little more audible in when we have conversations.
What?
Like, whenever I'm, like, asking you a yes or no question.
Yes, of course.
It would have been funny if you would have just shrugged, I guess.
Sure, I guess.
Thank you, Charlie. Yeah, one-word responses would be great.
Yeah, the whole time, during the whole show.
Yeah, that perfect. Fantastic.
What do you think about the Royals last night? Eh.
Meh.
Yeah, all right.
Sucked.
You know.
Meh. There are a couple other smaller Chiefs stories that caught my eye throughout this week. As now, by the way, TV update. The two TVs in front of me are now on a college baseball game between Louisville and Kentucky, and some show that's currently showing mountains. I really don't care about either of these TVs. But two interesting smaller stories from the Chiefs this week. First of all, where do you think the Chiefs ranked in the AFC? I'm sorry, in the entire NFL, pardon. Where do you think the Chiefs ranked in the NFL in pressures allowed in 2016? Would top 10 surprise you? I would have put them right in the middle. I would have probably thrown a horseshoe right around 16 and said, all right, how much was I off by? Would top 5 surprise you? Top 5 would have shocked me. According to Pro Football Focus, the Chiefs and Raiders tied for the fewest pass rushes, the fewest pressures allowed in the NFL last year. That's 126 pressures per team, 126 pressures each throughout last year, which is coming in at what, like 7-8 a game ballpark? That truly surprised me. And partially it's a story I would spend like 10 minutes on during my usual like off-season Chiefs podcasting, but it feels kind of like a small story now because, you know, now those pressures are going to be less consequential as Alex Smith is looking for an open DeMarcus Robinson instead of an open Jeremy McCoy. But I digress. I thought that was very interesting. For all of the problems the Chiefs had in run blocking last year, where the run game was toxic and the offense was completely stunted because of it, the offensive line got some blame because they would just not get push in short yard situations. The running backs rightly got blamed because they weren't making any of their own plays. It was terrible last year. But because of that, I ended up at least, not giving the pass blocking enough credit. I mean, that's fantastic. Tied for the best in the league with the other cream of the crop in the AFC West. Somebody tweeted earlier, other than Alex Smith, who's the most important player to determining if the Chiefs have a successful season, which is a good conversation. I like that question. 913-3810-810 if you feel like you've got an answer that's going to surprise me. But who has to have whose season is most important to determining the Chiefs' success? Not named Alex Smith. I went off the board and said Derek Carr. Because I think that's true, actually. By the way, Derek Carr, he was, as this stat showed, incredibly well-protected last year and still very inaccurate. I think Crabtree and Amari Cooper ended up having, this is off the top of my head, so I don't quote me to, you know, like, quote me to your friends, but not, like, to an expert, basically. That's how I see myself. I see myself in the middle there. I think I'm going to give you something that your friends aren't going to know, and I'm going to be off by enough that you should never, like, cite this to someone who actually knows what's going on. But Carr and Crabtree I'm sorry, Cooper and Crabtree bailed out Derek Carr on a level beyond, I think, any other receiving quarterback combo in the league. Like, Carr wasn't missing badly, but he was missing enough that Cooper and Carr had to make up for it with their giant catch radiuses. I think there's a little bit of room to knock Derek Carr around, especially once they have to pay that offensive line and that defense and those receivers. Then all of a sudden, he's going to be working with less around him. Now, if he develops as the Raiders hope he does, then it won't matter. But I found all of those things interesting. The other story that I thought that sort of piqued my interest was about Patrick Mahomes. Bleacher Report put out a story about how the Chiefs are the perfect environment for Pat Mahomes' development. SB Nation had a very similar story. ESPN's app sent out a push notification paraphrasing Adam Teicher, who was talking about how Mahomes is progressing and getting more comfortable making play calls in the huddle. Mahomes had a quote, I think at some point last week, about how he felt like he wasn't that far off, which might have made Andy Reid cringe and then chuckle. I don't know. But the development and like the expressed confidence of Patrick Mahomes is going to be extremely interesting this year, because as he is more willing to say that he feels ready, he is going to become a bigger and bigger story if the Chiefs and or Alex Smith struggle. So this is all going to be very interesting. This development is going to be something to keep an eye on. It's good. It's good. It might be a distraction. It might frustrate you as a Chiefs fan throughout the year. You're going, oh, leave Alex alone. It's his team, blah, blah, blah. But you ought to be rooting for Patrick Mahomes in week 8. You'd be saying, man, I want to play. I'm ready to go. I want to see the action. All right, now we're going to the phone. It's going to be a little bit confusing here because JD and JT are on the line. I could just like hit one of them and just see what happens, but we're going to go to JD, who's here first. JD, thank you for calling. Welcome to Sports Saturday. What's up?
Hey, happy Saturday to you and your team there.
Thank you. My team of Charlie is having a great Saturday also.
Great. Happy to hear that. I wanted to chime in about the wide receiver piece that you mentioned a few seconds ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm totally on board with your comments in regards to the Chiefs needing a veteran wide receiver. And looking at this receiver core, I'm shocked that Andy Reid would be comfortable with who he's got, given his mm-hmm. history of elite wide receivers
yes.
in their primes,
yes.
might I add.
Absolutely.
I guess I'll tell you why I don't think the Chiefs are going to get a wide receiver, and it's just the timeline of events. I think you would drop Macklin after you find out Eric Decker is available, not before. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely. You can try to replace that veteran production more cheaply when you know that's out there.
Exactly.
Yep.
And in the Chiefs' case, they dropped Macklin first, and then Decker became available. And of course, that's just looking at the Eric Decker specifically, but I don't think they're going to do that or do that in regards to get a veteran wide receiver. I think they're going to stick with what they've got, and I hope I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What concerns me is I don't consider Tyreek Hill an elite wide receiver, and I definitely don't consider Conley. Besides Tyreek Hill, I don't think any of these guys would maybe even be a starter on any of these teams, let alone, you know, now an everyday player and to try to fill Macklin's shoes. I guess I'm just shocked, knowing what we know about Andy Reid and what he likes, that he would even consider this. So I just feel like there might be more to the story than what meets the eye. But all is not the air. Great show. Thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate it, JD. I'm in lockstep with you on just about everything there. The only place where I deviate is I think Tyreek Hill absolutely can become an elite receiver, and I've hashed out those reasons why. You can disagree with him, and it's fine. But what the Chiefs are doing now, which again is very odd, especially considering that they want to be considered a contender, I think, is they're saying Tyreek Hill can become a number one receiver, a true number one receiver. I think the ceiling for Chris Conley is becoming a legit number two receiver. They don't have a number three. But I completely agree that I don't expect them to go sign Eric Decker. I don't expect them to go bring in any veteran, because if they wanted a veteran wide receiver on this team that could produce right away, they would have kept Jeremy Maclin. They would have said, you know what, this sucks. We're going to have to cut Dustin Colquitt and Ja Reed, but we'll get a sixth offensive lineman elsewhere. We'll get a cheaper punter. Because we want to contend this year. The offense is palpably worse without Jeremy Maclin. So I agree, JD. I think I would be surprised if they come through with a veteran addition, even though I think they should. I would be pleased and surprised. But at this point, why would they? And if they were planning to do this, were they just going to wait until someone got cut? Because you can do some gambling there. You can gamble and say, well, eventually somebody's going to cut a receiver that should be starting somewhere. Eventually it's going to be a cap casualty for a team that's not really contending and that wants to just clear out cap space for the future. But again, that's exactly what Jeremy Maclin just was. Jeremy Maclin was the big surprise cut that a non-contending team would make, and then a contending team like the Ravens would go swoop him up and say, oh, man, I guess it makes sense that, you know, the Browns didn't want him, but we sure do. Except for in this case, the Chiefs are the Browns. None of it makes sense. And now the Chiefs are betting on potential, not what we've seen. I think they're betting on Tyreek Hill developing into a true number one. They're gambling on Chris Conley developing into a true number two. And they're gambling on one of those other guys who can run and catch developing into someone you can rely on as a third receiver. And the third receiver in Andy Reid's offense is not inconsequential. Back to the phones, JT. You're on Sports Saturday. How's it going?
Hey, guys. It's going good. I love the comment about you and your team. In my mind, you and your team is sort of like the Grinch and his dog.
Ooh, I like that.
Huh? Yeah, that's really what I visualized immediately when I thought of team.
That's perfect.
Anyway, so the Chiefs, what I think's really going on here, I believe that T. Reid and Dorsey have built up enough goodwill. They've looked at what they've got, and they said, hey, Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill, we think we've got the young core in place to make a real run 2 or 3 years from now. Mm-hmm. That's why they did the trade-up. I anticipate them being perfectly happy with 8, 9, 7. Not perfectly happy, because they're going to try to win every game. They're competitive. I don't mean it like that. But I anticipate saying we can take a step back to take 3 steps forward, and I think that's what's going on here. I believe that all the moves they've made, if you look at them, are setting them up to be in a good position 2 to 3 years from now. Okay.
Yeah,
I think that's why Alex Smith is gonna probably get cut after this year, even though I don't believe that Mahomes will be ready.
Well, that's the one piece of this that I still don't totally understand, because I agree that's an option and that looks like what they're doing, but they're doing it half-assedly. Because if you really are going to prepare for next year and you want to have some cap room carry over, because there's some sort of rollover minutes type thing with the cap that they'll have play out.
Right.
Why wouldn't you just cut Alex Smith right now and really admit it?
Well, because you have to realize there's a certain level of failure that's acceptable.
Yep.
But you can't go to that. You can't tank to 2-14. If you're competitive and you're in the 6-10 to 10-6 churn, as Seren likes to say. If they remain in that, and then they can build for 2 years out, that's okay. Otherwise, Clark Hunt will come fire them all.
Well, I think that's, if that is the mindset, that's something where everyone just has to be on the same page. I agree that that's exactly what's motivating it. If they really are saying, we're not really going to contend this year, we're going to just try to keep a full stadium. But I spent the first 30 minutes of the show this morning talking about how much I hate that. Like, that irks me so much. Like, if you're gonna tank, whatever, tank. Although the next year, obviously, they'll have a first-round pick, so it doesn't really matter, I guess.
They're
not maximizing that, though.
I can hate that. Yeah, we can all hate that, but Clark Hunt, who pays the bills, he can't hate, you know, he has to have that full stadium. He has to have fan interest, or else the bills don't get paid. That's just like the people who said we should sign Kaepernick, and my contention is you lose 10% of your freaking season ticket holders if you do it. A 10% cut in the overall revenues for the Chiefs is significant, okay?
Right, sure.
So, I mean, it's business first. I believe this would happen, but I think within the realm that they're allowed to do, that's what Reid and Dorsey are doing.
Well, and this is something I agree with you, JT. It's something that I said the Sunday after it happened, is I think you have to get really close to admitting right out of the gate that this move is for the future. And if you admit that, then you're saying they're not really trying to win this year, which is okay. If they're preparing for a post-Roethlisberger, post-Brady AFC, that makes perfect sense. The path to the Super Bowl is way easier once those guys are retired. However, I think most Chiefs fans are trying to have it both ways, trying to say, well, they're preparing for the future and they're going to contend this year, and I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too there.
You're hitting the nail on the head, but what I would tell you is, think about it from the standpoint of somebody who's a marketer. Yes, mm-hmm. Chiefs fans are trying to have it both ways. So I got to sell them both ways.
Mm-hmm.
How do I do that? I figure out how to build this as best I can while remaining above 6-10.
JT, I think you've got a real good case there. It's a little bit of a sad one, but if it ends up playing out a few years down the road, then it's a great case. So
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, thanks, guys.
The future will judge it. Thanks for the call, as always. And it makes sense. What JT's saying makes sense. Something we talked about last week. Tom Bahali comes off the books next year. Alex Smith comes off the books next year. They're trying to get rid of this Macklin dead money in 2 years. The situation for Jay Howard comes off the books after this year. The situation for 2019 is going to be wide open for the Chiefs. But then they're going to be paying, you know, Marcus Peters big money, and they're going to be paying Tyreek Hill a big contract soon. And you can only push it back so far, and I'm okay with it moving a little bit. The Chiefs are never going to win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. We pretty much, I think, kind of all agreed on that last year, I think. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. But they admitted that they're planning for the future whenever they drafted Pat Mahomes. And they've got a lot of good to build around. It just means that you've got to recalibrate for this year. And maybe with Alex Smith, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe Jeremy Maclin being gone doesn't move them. In fact, it doesn't move them from a Super Bowl contender to 8-8. He doesn't cost them 4 wins. But the Chiefs are admitting to making a lateral move, which is not something that contenders do. I think it's that simple. 913-3810-810 is the phone number if you want to chime in, talk about the Chiefs. Maybe spend a little bit of time on the Royals here coming up as well. Baseball Tonight with Charlie and I comes your way at 2 o'clock, but this is Sports Saturday.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Wrap it up shop here for stage one of the 3-stage picnic that I'm living through today. In case you missed it at the beginning of the show, my backpack is currently filled with 2 things of ramen, a packet of tuna, an entire box of Wheat Thins. I've got a yogurt somewhere. I brought a cold brew coffee and a lime-flavored water thing. And it's because Charlie Carlin and I have got the long shift today. We've got this 3-hour jaunt, and then baseball tonight, pregame at 2, postgame at around 6, as soon as the Royals game ends, which I'm very excited for. Big day, and they're back tomorrow from 9 to noon as well. Charlie asked me a question during the break. He said, do you want to talk about the MLB draft at all? And I went, oh, that's happening. I mean, I know nothing. I couldn't tell you a single player entering the draft. That's not true. That Oregon State pitcher who had the real gross thing from his past come up, that I don't even want to talk about today. I know his last name is Heimlich. Like the maneuver. That's it, though. And that's not a good reason to know a prospect's name. It's very bad. So bad that it's like, we've got about 7 minutes left in this show. Not going to do that yet. We'll see how tomorrow goes. The Royals last night were really interesting and really sad all at once because Eric Skoglund had an amazing first start And his last two have been terrible. His last two starts, he's gotten through 3.1 innings and given up 11 hits and 6 earned runs. Amazingly, last night wasn't that bad, because he only recorded 4 outs and gave up 7 hits, allowing somehow, like, this seems like a mathematical impossibility. He gave up only 2 runs with all that. So, nice working, Sko. Sko back to Omaha. Skomaha. There we go. Found it. So now the Royals are back in a place. And, like, the thing that I want to ask Monty and Les and Seren today is, you know, what are the Royals going to do until Duffy gets back? And even then, what are they doing with his pitching staff? And even then, does anything matter? We could end up with a very existential baseball tonight. Because the best thing that the Royals have done over the last few weeks is stay interesting. Because even though Skoglund was terrible last night, a handful of pitchers came in and cleaned it up really well. Like, they turned what should have been a disaster into a really good game until Chris Young came in. And even then, I don't have, like, a ton of content to gripe about when it comes to bringing in Chris Young in that position, because it was either going to be him or Soria. And I understand wanting to save Soria. It was a tie game. If you can't trust Chris Young to just get you through an inning without letting it be completely blown open, you know, what is he on the roster for? And maybe that's the question you have. And if that's the question you have, then the answer is because look around. And this is something that I heard Cody talking about this last week, and I was talking about this at the beginning of the season, like before the season began, as I was settling in to make the Royals an 83-81 team. They're not great at anything. And that's been a consistent theme this whole season. It's going to be a consistent theme until they start trading their pieces away. They're not good enough at anything to cover up their deficiencies. The starting rotation with Danny Duffy was good. And you can point to the bad days of all of those guys. And it's not great. It's not a great rotation. It was a good rotation. But you've got to have a good rotation and a great bullpen if you're going to score 2 or 3 runs every night. Like last night in the top of the 9th inning, The Royals came in down 4. And it was Kane, Hosmer, Salvi, Moose waiting to go. That was the first 4 guys coming up in that inning, needing 4 runs. And I never thought for a second that they were going to be able to even tie the game back up. Just never even a hope. And that's sad. Whenever the heart of your lineup just seems to have a 0% chance. But Moustakas ended up coming up with the bases loaded. So it wasn't really those guys' fault. I mean, Moose could have turned that whole equation around a little bit better. But then eventually, Alcides Escobar comes up. Guys on first and third, one out, grounds in a double play, ball game. Because that's how this roster works right now. And it's sad whenever there are full stops in this lineup. And you just can't have that. And also have, now without Danny Duffy, a mediocre at best starting rotation, a below average bullpen, and then an offense with a few bright spots and some corpses. And it doesn't put together a team that loses 100 games. That doesn't give you 65 wins. It gives you like 80. And an 80-win team is interesting, but it's not good for business. I mean, it's good for business, but it's not good for actually winning. It's not good for building meaningfully. And Dayton Moore knows that. The Royals built meaningfully and it ended up getting them an AL championship and a World Series. They can build, again, pretty easily. Easier than most teams are going to get a chance to do. Because you ship out some of these big high-dollar pieces, you get real assets back. Build around Duffy, Salvi, Moose, and the prospects that the other guys bring into the system. It's a team that can win again in a couple of years. But staying at 500 is not going to do anybody any favors. Thanks to Charlie Carlin and Evan Riggs for joining me. We'll be back, Charlie and I, at 2 o'clock for Baseball Tonight pregame. This is Sports Saturday. Dang it.